And, of course, we've got more open lines for you. Let's get right into it in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And I hope you're enjoying the rest of your Independence weekend. Let's go to Carol in Virginia. Hello, Carol. Thanks for holding so long.
Hi, George. It's such a pleasure to speak to you. I have a couple of things to talk about.
Nothing's crazy on this show, Carol.
I know. first of all, I used to work for FEMA. I was an emergency management specialist at Mount Weather for about 7 years. And I was there for 9/11. I took the first call on 9/12. And I knew right away, I knew practically that day that the towers, that was a done deal. I grew up in New Jersey, and I saw the towers being built, and I just felt it. I'm a sensitive. I don't call myself a psychic, but I get many psychic pops often, and I see ghosts and things like that, and so does my mother. But anyway, after a while, as soon as Homeland Security came in and the Patriot Act, FEMA started firing people like crazy for the silliest reasons. And I was a Labrador breeder. I bred English Labs for confirmation and for field.
Sure. Great breed, by the way, isn't it?
Pardon?
It's a great breed of animal.
Oh, I know. I have my little Troopy here. He's a chocolate guy. And I told this joke about what color takes well to getting used to the gun. And by my saying the word gun, I got fired. And I said, like heck, my country's going to fire me like that. So I found the best law firm I could in D.C. They took my case pro bono, and they sued Homeland Security.
Dun, 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 dun. I didn't know you could. So did you win?
It was in 03. Yes. Yes.
How much did you win? Can you say?
Oh, nothing. They were just going to
get reinstated,
disable me forever from ever working again.
Did you get your job back?
No, I didn't want it back. I didn't get that job back, but they were really going to disable me, and I'm a very my BA is in education, but I've worked in museums a lot.
I'm a little confused, though. What did you sue them for?
Oh, for freedom of speech. First Amendment.
So and when you say you won, what did you win?
Oh, just to be able to work again, because they were going to disable my chances of going out into the workforce.
They were really
going to throw the book at me.
I see. They were going to ruin your ability to get another job.
Yeah.
Okay.
And they were going to go after me even for my pittance of a yearly, the state money.
Right.
I mean, everything. They were just rampant about
so
this.
So you won. But tell me this, Carol. This whole thing has left you feeling how?
Well, it left me feeling wonderful until lately. I was I've had daily chronic headaches most of my life, and I went to a bad neurologist who put me on this drug called gabapentin, and I didn't want to take that drug, but she talked me into taking 100 milligrams, which I did. But then I got parasites. And this is where I have a question for you. In Virginia, they say they don't have any parasites anywhere in the state.
That's not true.
I know. So I went to
parasites, they're everywhere.
I know. So I went to the emergency room, and they said, you have scabies. And I said, no, I don't. I bathe every day. And the doctor left, and he brought this mental health worker in. And I said, no, no. You see, these are scabies, and I have them only on above one knee. And so she was just asking me a lot of questions, and I'm very honest, and I like to talk. And so then she went away, and it was a few hours. They got a court order and took me to a state mental institution. I couldn't believe it. I'd never even been arrested.
You've gone from FEMA, fired because you talked about a joke about a gun.
Yes, and that was in 2003. And so in 2005, I moved from Northern Virginia, where Mount Weather is, to Tidewater, Virginia, which is, I live on a river now, which is just about 5 miles down the river from Yorktown.
Well, let me ask you this. I mean, did they cart you off to an institution?
Yes! They shackled and chained me.
For how long?
My dad had died in 05. So in 06, I moved to the Ware River, just down from Yorktown, to live with my mother, because we have a big house and a lot of property, and she didn't want to live alone. And my dad, he stayed around for a good 5 years.
But let me, how did you finally get out?
Oh, and it was under a court order. I just played the game.
Ah.
I played their game. But what they do at this place, they medicate you.
Of course they do.
I couldn't believe it. So they gave me all these horrible, powerful drugs. And I don't take drugs, except for that stuff the neurologist gave me. So they tripled that. So I got out in 7 days. And I didn't know what these drugs were or anything. And after 2 weeks, I started spiraling down and not knowing where I was or who I was. And then it was as if they put LSD in them, and I had never done psychedelic drugs. And so I was walking around my house with a .357 Magnum Colt and calling the police 7 times in one day.
They're going to put you back in the home if you kept doing that.
Yeah, so I put the gun away and everything. But then they took me to the police station and chained me to the bench, and I had to talk to a counselor. She was really cool.
Carol, let me ask you something.
What?
Where's the .357 Magnum now?
Oh, it's locked away.
Oh, all right.
Oh, it's locked away.
How did you get a gun
It was my father's.
Oh.
They're all locked away.
Can you own it legally?
Yeah.
Oh, all right.
Oh, yes.
Well, you need to be careful.
I'm not a dangerous person.
I hope not.
No, I'm a school teacher and a.
You're teaching now?
No, I take care of my mother.
You're a retired school teacher.
Yes, yes, but and I was a director of education at a medium-sized museum. Oh, no, I'm perfectly
fine. All right, so you had a question for me.
Oh, yes. My question is, you had a guest who talked about parasites.
Oh, yeah.
There were three doctors in the country who talked about parasites. And do you remember them?
I don't remember all the names. It could be Dr. Sherry Tenpenny. What you can do is go to my website, search, put in parasites, and a couple of those doctors' names will probably come up. Okay? And that was about 2.5 years ago, because we also talked about Lyme disease and things like that. So definitely follow up that way. Let's go to Frank in Hollywood, Maryland. Welcome to the program, Frank.
Howdy, George. Glad to be back with you. I got two things on my mind, but first, what station are you on in Washington, D.C. area?
I don't have the frequency numbers because I'm on 573, but go to my website, Frank. Just go to my website.
I'm getting you out of Cleveland, Ohio, and half the time I never had a decent AM radio.
Yeah, you can get me out of Baltimore too. You know, that'll be easier for you.
I want to run two things by you. The Bigfoot. How come that we never find any excrement from the Bigfoot? We find very few footprints, like one. An animal of that size, 7 feet average, 500 pounds, should leave footprints all over the place.
Well, they get some footprints. Not a lot, but they
get
some.
A few. They get a yeah. few, and then dogs don't seem to want to track it. And no discernible habitat. To relate something to you, you remember the old ABC television series, $6 Million Man with Lee Majors?
I sure do.
That was a good series. They had a two-part episode on there about Bigfoot and the UFOs, and the UFOs made the Bigfoot a robot. And Steve Austin encountered the robot, and they had a fight, and he snatched his arm off. Now, is there any possibility that, and then whenever you see a Bigfoot sighting, you see a UFO sighting?
Well, I know where you're headed, and sure, that's a possibility.
No coincidence. No coincidence.
Remember Star Wars, Chewbacca? What did he look like? Remember?
Yeah, but he looked like Bigfoot.
Exactly. Look, a lot of people think that Bigfoot could be dimensional, could be from an extraterrestrial. Who knows what? I still happen to think it's something that was always on the planet, and it's like a missing link. But absolutely possible that it's coming from a UFO. And, you know, they could be the ETs. Absolutely positive. You can't throw that out. Jeff is in Whitehorse, Canada. Welcome to the show. Hey, Jeff. Go ahead.
George, how's it going tonight? Okay. Kudos on booting that dude off. I've heard those guys try to get on daytime talk shows, so that's just confirmation. And just a further with it, you know, carbon dioxide's not a pollutant. Trees make oxygen out of that. Anyway, I wanted to talk. My heart really goes out for that woman that called, lost her son.
Oh my God! Yes.
And I wanted everyone to maybe take a few moments just to send out some positive thoughts for that family.
Thank you, Jeff.
That'd be good.
Yeah.
And I was really surprised to hear that caller in between then and now that called about Rizwan, your guest on Tuesday night.
Yeah. Did you like him?
Oh, he was great. He was great. I sent him an email, a big long one, because I am an inventor. And something occurred to me. It has to do with that other thing that you're doing, you know, that deal where you're going to help people out when, you know, you get a certain amount of, you know, that's
up, right. Exactly. With the Beyond Belief.
So it just occurred to me. That,
we're 7,000 subscribers away to do that, by the way.
Yeah. And I was just thinking, George, you know, Coast to Coast is one of the biggest radio audiences in the world, if not the biggest radio audience in the world. Probably right up there with Rush Limbaugh.
Well, it's way up there, that's for sure.
And I was just thinking, you know, I'm in one of those situations too, but I didn't call for that. You know, what I was thinking is that, you know, there's no need to put all that kind of pressure on you to get so many subscribers or something.
No, I want to. This is my way.
The whole audience to participate.
How do we do
that? There's a way that if everybody in the Coast audience sent a dollar to something, you could set up something on your website, just like a little terminal thing. Just, you know, send a dollar, 75 cents, $2, something. You could finance all kinds.
Let me tell you the reason we don't have the manpower to do that. I mean, this would be like Santa Claus receiving letters at Christmas.
Oh, I know, but you could put people like me to work.
I'm definitely going to set up a foundation when we get to that point. And it's going to be a not-for-profit, obviously, and I may need one or two people to help administer some of that. Tom's going to oversee that. But that's my plan, and we'll see what happens, by the way. We've been doing Beyond Belief. It's coming up on a year. We're going to have some meetings with the company to see if they want to continue the show. I'll let you know that as well. We had a very ambitious goal of subscribers. I don't know if they're being tracked properly, to tell you the truth. But so I'm about 7,000 short of where I need to be based on the income stream that comes out of that show. It's a different kind of formula. Let's take another caller or two. But, Jeff, great ideas, by the way. Let's go to Livy in Los Angeles. Hey, Liv, welcome to the show.
Oh, my God. George, I'm so happy to talk to you. I'm excited at the same time. Can I tell you a quick story first before I ask you a question?
You sure can.
When the TV went from analog to high definition, I had to wait a while before I purchased a TV set. My family, you know, they were, like, addicted to the TV. Something happened. The TVs were in the box. The house got robbed. And it was depressing. So I did not buy a TV to this day. But I started turning on the radio station, and I heard your voice. This is when I got off from work. I don't hear the whole show. But it was so interesting. I kind of got the family to listen to it. Now everybody listens to Coast to Coast.
I love it. Thank you for getting that done for us.
And no TV. So thanks to your show, I don't watch the garbage that comes on. And you're right. There's a lot out there.
There sure
on
is.
On TV, of course. Sure now, about the question I want to ask you. Is a friend of mine got me into meditating years ago, and I've heard you talk about it on your show, but while I was meditating, I have this. What happens is I have I see things. I see it's like pictures, flashes. When I first started meditating, and I thought, you know, this is strange. I've never heard of it. Because I taught myself. I read books, and I thought maybe I was doing it wrong. And so I asked people about it, and they told me, you better keep that to yourself, because that's kind of weird. And but it's been gnawing at me for a long time. It kind of scared me, because so I stopped meditating. But then I thought, you know, after meditation, I felt better.
I would continue it. Don't worry about it. Just keep doing what you're doing.
Well, no, I was, but what happened was these flashes kept coming. They're like flashes of pictures, very fast. And it's like going to a carnival, looking into a, one of those,
kaleidoscopes.
Photography, And the faster you turn the pictures, the more in sync they are, the more flowing they are. And that's how it was in meditation. And then one day, it stopped. The fast picture stopped, and then I saw things. I saw, like, it was a steam pipe. It was like you're below ship level. You could see the sun shining and steam. That was one thing. And then I saw clouds. My eyes were closed, but I saw clouds. I saw different things. I can't explain it. And then you get the feeling, what do I need eyes for if I can still see?
Well, listen, what you're doing is you're probably doing a little bit of remote viewing. You're probably also very intuitive, so you're picking up some precognition as well. But you know what? I'd go back to your meditation. Don't stop it. People have different ways of getting it to work, and that's yours. Hey, we're going to chat with our Gary Patterson in a moment about some rock history. Don't go away. Indeed, and don't forget, you still got a couple of days to go with your Independence Weekend, so I hope you have a wonderful time. You know, there's nothing like music to make us feel good. A while back, I got a chance to talk with rock historian R. Gary Patterson, a special treat to Mr. Walter Perezader, founding member and saxophone player for the rock group Chicago, came along. We talked about the band's long-running success, the heyday of the rock scene, various music personalities, such as Jimi Hendrix as well. If you're into rock, if you're into that scene, then you know just how exciting that all is. We'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Of course, Walter Perezader, our guest from Chicago, our Gary Patterson with us. Gary, say hello to Walter.
How you doing, Walter? Hey, Gary, it's a pleasure to hear you ear to ear like this.
Walter's written a number of books. Gary has written Take a Walk on the Dark Side, all about rock and roll legends and myths. He wrote about The Walrus Was Paul, Hellhounds on Their Trail. He's done just about everything. Gary, this has got to be, for you, a guy who loves music, this has got to be great.
Oh, it is great. I mean, Chicago is one of my favorite bands. And if you take a look back in 1967, I think that's when Chicago started. It was a golden age of rock and roll because you had Jimi Hendrix who started in 67, Chicago started. And I got to tell you, Walter, the first album I ever purchased was Chicago Transit Authority, you know.
Oh, my gosh. Well,
my favorite song on that album was that really got my attention was Southern California Purples. So that goes way back, doesn't it, my friend?
You know, Gary, I got to share a little bit of a story, if you don't mind.
Go ahead.
California Purples, that was Jimi Hendrix's favorite song.
Yeah. I had a feeling like that because, you know, I knew that just the sound was just so cool. And then, of course, I think it went into I'm a Man, which was, you know, a much bigger song for Chicago on radio. But, you know, just the sound and the blending of the horns and fusion and all the great bands were able to reinvent themselves. They were not afraid to go out of a formula. And, you know, Chicago's that way. And, you know, long may you put out many more albums.
Well, you know, Gary, it's really a pleasure and an honor to talk to you. If I might say, you being an archivist, I'm a pack rat. I don't call myself an archivist. And you're an author also. But someday I think I would write a definitive book about how I was friends with Jimi Hendrix and Janis Joplin.
That would be great.
But there's a book that I think you would dig, and I would even send it to you. It's Jerry Hopkins, who used to write for the Free Press back in the days that you're talking about. And I don't know if you're aware of him, but he wrote a definitive book on Elvis Presley.
That's exciting.
You know,
that's
not any kind of plug or anything. I'm just looking at it in my library right now, and he was my first interview. And you never forget your first interview.
Never.
No, you never do. Walter, how did you get involved in music in the first place? Had to have been when you were a youngster.
Well, you know, I'm going to just have to tell you the truth, and that's all I can ever tell you. That's how my mom played the radio great. My dad was a 6'5" trumpet player, as I've told George earlier.
Yeah.
My first remembrances of anything was my father. I would hang onto his calf and be on his foot, and he'd play his trumpet, and he would march around playing his horn in the basement flat of the house that his dad was that he was born in, that his sister and his brothers were raised in, and where his father was waked in on the west side of Chicago, along where Joe Mantegna grew up, and then our manager, Peter Chivarelli, St. Finbar's Parish. But I just remember him, and he seemed like a giant to me, playing music. And then he took us to a picnic grove where my uncle, who had two music schools, was the keyboardist. They had a couple of saxophone players, a drummer who fronted the band. His name was Tom Geiling, whose son played for Kentucky, which was a trip later on to know this. But my first recollections of music were seeing all of them play and people dance and having fun. And then I looked at the faces on the guys in the band, and my dad included, and they were having fun. And I went, there's got to be something to this. And I'm not being glib. I'm being totally honest with you. And at the age of 9, my uncle made a great deal for my dad to play to get a clarinet. And I saw Benny Goodman on the Ed Sullivan Show, and I says, Dad, I don't want to hurt your feelings. I don't want to play your trumpet. I want to play that long black thing that guy's playing on TV. And he says, that's fine. He says, I'm not going to make you practice. You just, if you do it for the love of it, that's all I care. And that was...
He was right.
Well, my goodness, I was a prodigious player. I was playing with adults in orchestras at the age of 11 and 12. Was handed off from a teacher at DePaul University, my alma mater, at 12 to audition for Jerry Stoll, who was one of the clarinetists in the Chicago Symphony. And that was my path until I was about 12, and I went to a rock and roll dance. And this is no joke. I saw the saxophone player get girls.
Smart move.
And I'm not kidding. And I said to my dad, would any of, you know, there's sons of the guys in dad's band had bands, and they were 25, 26 years old. I said, would anybody want to teach me just a little bit on the sax, you know, and I'd like to play it. And my dad put me in a controlled environment at 13, just on Friday and Saturdays, and he sat me down at beforehand, and he says, I don't want you to know women. I don't want you to do drugs. I don't want you to drink. And I always thought two out of three wasn't bad. You know, but,
I love it.
But honestly, he said to me, be at the curb, because these guys are older. And he says, if your grades slack off or your sport slack off, I'm going to pull you out of this because your mother will kill me if you do something crazy. He said, when you get a call for a gig on Friday or Saturday night, that was all. He said, know what the dress is, know what horns to bring, and be early on the curb and wait for the older guys, because I couldn't drive, of course, and help set up. He says, because if you stink, they're going to feel sorry for you and they're going to pay you.
I love it. Your father sounds like he had a tremendous part of your growing up.
He was my hero.
That's great. Gary, I'm going to take some calls with you and Walt here. Let's go to John in Ann Arbor, Michigan, east of the Rockies. John, you're on Coast to Coast. Go ahead.
Hey, folks. Good to hear from you. And I'm a big fan of Chicago, and I've been to a few concerts here in Michigan, Pine Knob and the Fox Theater and stuff there with Chicago.
Both great venues, too.
Yeah. You guys do a great job all the time.
Well, you know what? Thank you. I have to tell you, I remember the Fox Theater was a lot of fun to play, and we spent 4th of July's and we played baseball against the teams up there and beat the heck out of them and played 8 days and beat Bob Seger's record for a while for about 8 straight days at Pine Knob. And we still play up there. It's called something else. But we Michigan, we did our 25th anniversary special, my friend, up in Detroit because the crowds were so darn good. And we did, it was on ABC, and it was a two-parter.
It's my hometown, Walt.
You're kidding.
Yeah, born and raised there. And my mom's still alive, still up there. She's 83. And as a matter of fact, she just talked to her idol a couple days ago, Pat Boone.
On a day like today.
Do you know when Andy Williams died, I had Pat Boone on just to kind of eulogize him. And he told us that he was offered the song Moon River and turned it down because he didn't think it was going to be a hit. He's still kicking himself on that one.
I certainly could believe that. And but I have to say to the Michiganite there that I thank you for the support on behalf of the original fellas and even the fellas, the new guys that are like 25 years with the band.
How many guys have been with the band?
Well, with the three horn section and Robert Lamb, and it's Jimmy Panko is the trombonist and the songwriter. Robert Lamb is original vocalist, songwriter. Lee Lochnane is a songwriter, the trumpeter, and I must say the three of us, I didn't know this until people brought it up after we were together about 20 years, we're the longest standing horn section to ever play in the history of music.
And, wow. And you know what? This is unusual too, Gary, because you don't get a lot of a great horn music in some of these rock bands. Do you anymore?
Well, you know what? I have to tell you, Rob Thomas, with his band, always liked horns, and he always threatened to have us on a record. Elton John has had us play on some stuff. And to be honest, I think I've seen horn players on different shows from Letterman to Leno that from the feline side of the gender to guys, young guys, that they'll always be horn players. You know, if you look at Ricky Minor's horn section, and we know Ricky quite well, he's got four guys that play their heads off.
That's amazing, Gary, isn't it?
Well, it's fabulous. And, I mean, Chicago's horn section, I mean, it's the best. And, you know, in 67, you think about the horn bands and rock and roll, you had Chicago and you had Blood, Sweat, and Tears, Tower Power later, and Bill Chase. You know, I remember that listening to that. It was just a new texture to rock and roll. And listening to Chicago is just really innovative, the fusion of it. Another one of my favorite songs has always been Make Me Smile. And, you know, I just love that song. And also, of course, Color My World was the number one makeout song. I remember that when I was in college. So thanks for that.
Well, you know, I'm going to pass that on to Jimmy Panko and quickly tell you about how Color My World happened. It was part of that ballet of A Girl from Buchanan. Right. Buchanan, really. And he called me, and I think Alice Cooper was still living down the street from us, trying to get a break. And we were he was trying to put together his second album, and he said, "Hey, Walt, bring your flute down. I got an idea for this one part of the ballet." And he started with the arpeggio thing, the da-da-da-da-da-da. And about four hours later, he looks at me real quizzically, and he goes, with a few deleted expletives that I'll leave out here, he says, "Is this any good?" And I looked at him, and just being positive, and no other reason, because I'm not any sage or soothsayer, I looked at him dead in the eye, and I said, "It's going to make me famous."
How right you were.
And you know what? And that's from some dumb Croatian Czech gypsy that, you know, we were too stupid to be scared about things when we moved to California. That Al Cooper will tell you as a fact that he heard us at the Whiskey A Go Go on a Sunday night when we were just, you know, we were happy to have a gig. And he went back to New York and did the Child is a Father to Man album with the album cover that had the dolls of Allegan and all, you know, and all the fellas in the band. And he'd be the first one to say, you know, Parizader and those guys had the idea for the band first.
Everybody played at Whiskey A Go Go. Morrison played. The Doors played there. Everybody did.
We used to see Jim oozing down the street.
Let's go west of the Rockies. Bob, Tempe, Arizona. Go ahead, Bob.
Hello.
Hello there, Bobby.
How you doing, George? I can't thank you enough for what an incredible show.
Well, you're welcome.
Been with you for a long time, and I'm a first-time caller, and I got through the first time.
You're actually talking to Walt from Chicago.
Yeah, Walter.
Hey, how you doing, Bob?
How you doing, man?
You know what? I'm doing great. Christmas is starting to get about you.
So many great memories with the Chicago, and I really like the the old name Chicago Transit Authority. Saw you guys when I was 12 years old in the Celebrity Theater in Phoenix.
Yeah, of course.
Had the revolving stage.
We call it the revolving microwave of music. we played there this year, Bob, and you know, we played the big arenas, but we like to get and play the smaller places. So, you know, that stage still revolves. And, Bob, I have to tell you, I like to jump off of it along with Lee and Jimmy, and we sit down next to somebody, and we go, "Hey, how you doing? What do you want to hear?" And I remember the Celebrity Theater. We go through Arizona. We were there with the Doobies in Tucson this last summer, and we just had a ball with them. We started them out on arena tours back in the day, back in 74, I remember, Bobby Johnson and Pat Simmons and the boys.
Yeah, it's such a great little place. I've seen Mr. Zappa there more times than more fingers I have on both hands. And
great? He's still great as far as I'm concerned.
I like those smaller venues sometimes, Walter. They're more personal, aren't they?
Well, you know, I think I have some of the, being basically a player, I've written a few things. George, I really have to say, some of the smaller venues to me, I really do jump over the footlight, and I'll sit down next to somebody, and we'll play the theaters in the round we have and different places where you can do it, and Jimmy will do this at the Westbury where Sinatra used to play, and then, out in New York, and just sit down and say, "How are we doing?" And people say, "Oh, real good." And they're sort of shocked that we would do this, and then we'll say, "Is there anything you want to hear?"
Gary Patterson, Beach Boys in Chicago, they went at it in terms of sales of records, didn't they?
They did. Let me tell you, I mean, when Chicago, I think their first two albums were double albums, you know? I mean, that's a lot of material. And I was just really impressed that the Beach Boys actually played with Chicago on Wishing You Were Here. When you hear that harmony in there, I know they were on the road together, but, you know, that's called two super groups working together to create a fabulous, immortal song. And, you know, they're just so appreciative of the sound of that. It was great. And that's what I mean about, you know, great bands that can push the boundaries and bring in new material, and they always sound relevant. And Chicago is definitely a group with that. And, you know, I just love the song, and I love Beach Boys with Chicago.
Well, you know, I thank you for that, and I thank you on behalf of Dennis and Carl's memory, because they were friends. We did it in 75. We thought we'd do it again in 89. We did it before Carl passed in the 90s. and he had a nice summer in the sun. You know, I played the solo on Kokomo.
I love that song.
You know, and we do that. But it, we just had so much fun together that being ranked at the 13th all-time group at 13, with the Stones being 10 and the Bee Gees 12, they're 28 or 29 behind us, and the Eagles are 48. But to tell you the truth, it's a small little community we have, and we know Don and Glenn and everybody and Brian and Mike and Al. That it's just a shame that we lost a couple of guys.
Yeah.
And Carl in particular, I think, was probably the nicest man I've ever met in our business.
In your life, Walt, which person did you ever come across that had that wow star quality that just, you know, overwhelmed even you?
Well, there would be Jimi Hendrix.
Well, I never knew I had Martians in my garden. And I never knew there were aliens on my roof. I got shadow people, and they're living in my basement. Got a funny feeling Bigfoot's gonna be here soon. I was so blind before, I was so unaware. But now I swear I'm seeing Sasquatch over there. I can see the light, and I also see a ghost. 'Cause I'm listening to Coast to Coast. Well, you never knew that your baby was a hybrid. But as he grew, you began to see the clues. Now you know the signs, 'cause you learned it from George Norrie. Even while you sleep, you got Martians watching you. I turned on my radio in the middle of the night, and I heard things I need to know. And I can see the light, and I also see a ghost. 'Cause I'm listening to Coast to Coast. Good morning or good evening, wherever you may be, whichever world you're living. Your voice is always welcome here on my radio. Call in with your space transmitter or your telephone. And I turned on my radio in the middle of the night, and I heard things I need to know. Now I can see the light, and I also see a ghost. 'Cause I'm listening to Coast to Coast.
For Dan Galante, Gina Salvati, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Laudasur, Stephanie Smith, George Knapp, John B. Wells, Ian Punnett, and Art Bell. I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.